Frontline Season 2 is the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of everyday people. Join us as we dive into the lives of frontline workers who make a difference in their communities. In this unique series, our dedicated guests document their daily experiences from Monday to Friday, offering an intimate glimpse into the challenges and triumphs they face on the front lines.
Welcome to the Frontline Podcast, episode 2. I'm Andrew James.
And I'm David Gill.
And today we will have our guest who will be joining us very shortly. But before we get to that, it's a new year, David. Any New Year's resolutions?
Some resolutions. I'm not a big fan of resolutions, but I do like to kind of set a goal as such, or, you know, kind of an ongoing goal. So you could probably argue it is a resolution in some words, but for me, it's just about, I've just said that, and I'm going to end up doing the sort of thing that everyone does, which is about health and well-being and fitness. So I try and do a lot of running in my spare time to keep myself fit and healthy, especially as I'm getting on a bit and hitting the big 4-0 recently. I've got to kind of look after myself. And so I've signed up to a big run at the end of the year, and I'm going to try and do a few more along the way to keep myself going and keep fit and healthy the best I can. What about yourself?
I'm a little bit like you. I don't like using the terms resolutions. I think it's almost stereotypical, isn't it, this time of year? People make these grand gestures. They're almost guaranteed destined to fail quite quickly. But I have made one change. And that is, at the turn of the year, I decided to become vegetarian. My wife is vegetarian, and she's not so much influenced this. It's not so much a demand of hers, but it was something that, you know, you're never going to prepare two meals when, you know, it's easier and cheaper and makes more sense just to do the one. So it just became more practical to do it rather than, it became more of a hindrance to eat meat, which is a bizarre thing to say. But it seemed like a sensible change to put in. Mm. Also, to echo your own, this isn't resolution, it's just a slight plan. I'm kind of hoping to see if I can do a 10K before the end of the year. As you know, because you know me better than most of the listeners out there, I used to do runs, and in 2016 did the marathon, and then that basically destroyed my knee, so I've not been able to. So it's to see if I can actually physically still move that far.
Well, you know, I'm sure you will, as long as you get around it somehow, walk, run, crawl, whatever it may be. But
I think at this point, it may need a wheelbarrow. Let's be honest.
But yeah, and as you say, it's not about resolutions. I think that concept is starting to die off a little bit, and I think in a good way, because it almost implies that you've got to do this grand gesture, massively change things. And it's like anything. If you see it as an organic growth building up to something, I think it makes a real difference as well. And two reformed meat eaters now. Wouldn't have thought this 10 years ago. But again, it just shows how much people change over the years as well.
I think you make a good point there about the resolutions idea being a bit outmoded. I think the better way of doing it is having better intentions, because I think a resolution is a bit more solid, whereas better intentions gives you a bit more leeway. It's better for the mind rather than you must do this. It gives you a little bit more flexibility and it's a bit less pressure on yourself. And I think that sort of mindfulness and being more less hard on yourself is something that actually fits in quite well with our guest, Richie, who is a health improvement specialist with Public Health. And maybe that's something that he can talk about when we bring him in shortly.
And welcome to this week's guest. We have our guest, Richie Andrew, who has been on a previous episode back in, I believe, June last year. And as a health improvement specialist, we thought it'd be fascinating to have him on season two to really hear about his week, his reflections upon it. So welcome, Richie. Welcome back.
Hi, David. How are you doing?
Not too bad. How are you?
Not too bad at all. Thank you. Absolutely.
Good. Have you recovered from your week-long reflections?
That was a strange week. I kept thinking twice about whether I should say something or not. And I probably did self-censor a little bit, but it was an interesting exercise in itself. Just as an individual, yeah, it's good.
Fantastic, yeah. And that was kind of our theory behind this, is that we don't always give ourselves that sort of live reflection, that just basically talking to ourselves and really thinking about the week. So it's fascinating. So we'll listen to that in a second. But just before we do that, do you want to just give a little bit of an overview of your job and what it actually entails? Because I often find that job titles don't always give you a full understanding of what someone does.
No, it's a development role. It's working with multiple partners across public, private, voluntary sector to encourage prevention, delivery of services, and awareness, broadly speaking, to improve and prevent mental health. So we work obviously with, you know, with primary, secondary care partners in the NHS. We're right across the system. Mental health, there is, as you know, there's no health without mental health. And it's sort of as much about awareness as it is about these days about well-being and kind of what helping people find what works for them, I think is the most succinct way I can put it as well. So it's certainly not just about encouraging people to go to a GP, you know, be a good pill taker and access therapies. It's very much about physical activity. It's about finding their meaning and their purpose in life, all that stuff. So it's an interesting varied job, and it's one of those where you could do a whole lot more with a lot more people, but you've got to do the best you can with the limited resources you've got.
Fantastic. So with that in mind, let's jump straight in then. Let's listen to your week's reflections and then, let's have some questions afterwards. Monday.
It's Monday. It's the 15th of January, 2024, very early on into the new year. I started this year off with I was back at work on the second working from home and decided to have like a week of really try and get on top of things. I'm having a really solid plan, putting like some nice plans together, dates, all dates and diary for the year and all that stuff. And that's gone really well. Everyone came back week two and suddenly my inbox started to fill up. So I'm really pleased I actually came back, even if I came back a day earlier than the rush of people coming back to work after Christmas. I think it's wise to have like one or two days for me personally to be able to have that forward view, because my role in public health and mental health is so planning orientated. It's a real advantage just to be able to answer people's emails with questions about what's happening ahead really assertively, because I've already got a pretty clear idea of what's ahead. And that is something, even at the age of 45, after 20 years of doing this job, that I still have to sort of remind myself of. But I think probably my morning routine really helps. I tend to get up on a morning. I do swim, bike and run. I do triathlon and stuff. But getting up on a morning, usually on a Monday for me, involves a bit of a stretch, that sort of yoga-y sort of stretch and sort of a couple of like light sort of strength exercises and stuff. I'm a big fan of breath work. So I'll sit down, and I sat down in my little man cave this morning, did some of my breath work and meditation. And then usually once every couple of days, I'll do a cold dip. So I've got like a barrel out the back, and I jumped in there. That was 2.5 degrees this morning. So I was in there for just a minute and a half, and that was enough for me. And then just let yourself naturally warm up. And it's just brilliant for getting my head going and get my head sort of, it's like a wake up call. It's like a really fresh way to start the day. So I've had like, I've got 14 piles of notes in front of me, which are just like sort of post-it style notes. And they're all like relating to different actions or that relate to different under different projects. So sort of what I'm thinking today is I've got to start on those actions, but really what I need by the end of this week is all this into an action plan, so I can start to stay on top of things by project. And I had a meeting with our wellbeing network team this morning, which we do once every fortnight for about an hour and a half max, just to go through all the actions, all the incoming mail, and kind of they've got different actions that we've got going on the team. So we're doing like a web review, we've got events we're planning, and just allocating and delegating to the team according to the time they've got. But we also spend the first sort of 20 minutes or so just chatting about well-being and just chatting about how people are and what's happening to affect their job. And I'm not their direct manager, but I do supervise. We sort of supervise our work, and it's important to me that I know if they're okay. And actually they do the same to me. So we have a good relationship where that comes first, because I just don't think if you support, I don't think if I'm meant to be leading the wellbeing network work I'm doing, I don't manage them directly, but I need to make sure that they're okay and in a good place. So I can be sympathetic, I can be empathetic and compassionate to the work, to what's going on. And I get that back as well in spades because of that natural kindness, I think, as well. So they're great. So let me leave it there. I'm going to have a quick bit of lunch now and get onto things. And so I thought it's probably worth just illustrate that a bit further. Like this morning's meeting, when they both came online on a virtual meeting, my question I asked them was, tell me one good thing that happened over the weekend, because it's sort of like gratitude, isn't it? And then sharing and hearing about those different things as well. So it's huge. I mean, it makes a massive difference. It's like we can have a bit of a chat about what's going all right, what's not going all right. And there was a bit of that as well. And then we can move in and actually get the work, you know, into the business end of the meeting. And people are happier then, and that, you know, they realise we've sort of drawn a line between different stuff, but started with the most important thing, which is looking after the people you work with and looking after each other and being there for each other. And it works both ways. Like that, you know, they know, they've heard me say about different things going on at work that are a bit of challenging, and supported me and provided reassurance or advice or reflections on different challenges I'm facing, and I'm completely open like that. So it's a really good way of doing things. So this really sucks. We've got a wellbeing network which really wants to tackle a big chunk of kind of chronic stress and trauma that exists within the system with people that work or volunteer within the system. So we've put on loads of different programs this year, like with Saturday wellbeing taster sessions. We've got like a journals program, and the journals program is like a journal that we put together for the wellbeing network, working with local journal partner. It's 3 2-hour workshops, and people, we've had a lot of interest, like growing each time we've done a group of workshops. It's grown and grown in numbers, but what we keep noticing is that a lot of organizations talk really big about supporting the staff and the importance of wellbeing. When it comes to the crunch, when it comes to people being able to attend the workshops they've booked on, and there's a lot of like apologies coming through, and it's often like having to prioritize like certain things at work that the worker basically told them this is more important than that, or certain demands on the job, especially this is people who work front line. And actually the sort of repeating narrative is that actually they're being told that the work thing is more important than the well-being thing. And it's really frustrating, because all the chat that goes out there about the importance of well-being isn't transferring into kind of reality. And actually what, you know, all this means is that more people are under more pressure, you know, working in heightened awareness all the time. They won't be as productive, they won't be producing work as well, and they're more likely to be off work while we're trying to like help rebalance that. So it's so frustrating. I'm so frustrated. So we're having to put like alternatives in, like recording a workshop, putting it online, sending the journal out to them so they can actually miss the first workshop and do it in their own time and then attend the second one as long as nothing else comes up. But the system and the pressure in the system preventing people looking after themselves. It's like, this is not a thing that's going to get any better unless we actually commit and get more organisations to actually organise and get their shit together. It's really frustrating. And you can hear it when you speak to the staff as well.
Tuesday.
Well, interesting day today. The good, the bad, and actually the not too bad at all. Made a mistake last night. Actually started this year off with some approach intentions of being basically making efforts to give myself more time to get to places so that I'm not as late. Now, the aim is not to be as late. The aim is to actually plan better and have better boundaries. It links into one of the other things, which is about not saying yes to something until it's a yes. So, but also one of the things is to get better night's sleep during the weekdays, so I'm not as sort of I feel more organized, I feel a little bit better, because sleep to me is very important, but I'm a bit of a nightmare when it comes to discipline for my sleep. Last night made a mistake of having a bit of a late night, watching a bit of a box set and then a bit of PlayStation, blah blah blah. So ended up having to stay in bed this morning for an extra hour, which meant I only got time to do a cold dip. Even that was like, you know, in this cold weather, it was only a short amount of time, but it's not part of my, it's always part of a bigger routine of like a bit of meditation, breath work, some stretching, exercise, and all that went by the wayside. So did the normal thing, got ready, got on my day, but felt a bit discombobulated. However, first meeting of the day was sort of mid-morning, once I'd done emails and so on, at the Teesside University, meeting four psychology students who were going to be on placement and doing some project work for us. And that was really cool. It went really well. And actually, I could sense while I was doing it that it was my sort of previous version of me was very uncomfortable delegating work when with things I would hold on to and being a bit too precious about them. In other words, I found it difficult to detach myself from things that I'd quite passionate about. Like, in other words, I thought that, you know, I had this sort of problem about kind of thinking it can only go well if I was involved in it, and actually obviously it had to go well. So I could feel that happening while I was in the meeting describing it, and actually let that go very quickly. And we've sort of made plans for the next 4 weeks to get together and see that project, that initial project planning, and start to see it implemented, but putting it in the hands of these students who I think are very capable. All from Nigeria, had some fantastic stories to tell. So it was a really great meeting for me to sort of open up my eyes to kind of, you know, comparisons from their own home country to their discoveries of coming over here and how we do things here. And it's really interesting, like a bit of some cultural learning back and forth. So that was just really positive. But I love meeting new people, listening to their stories and learning from them. And they seem to enjoy it too, so that's a good thing. And I got there on time. I actually got there right on time. And it was like, they just arrived to meet me and it all went well. And normally I'm late for things. So actually that was really positive. Gave myself enough travel time to do it. It also meant that doing that means I didn't get, give myself travel time meant I didn't get everything else finished I meant to, which also, you know, in terms of emails and getting things done that I'd committed to that morning, which again is like, go easy on yourself, be kind to yourself, don't put yourself too much pressure on things, don't put too many tasks in the diary. So now I'm actually starting to tighten up my own boundaries with yes, no, and time and so on. I'm starting to now learn more about what my capabilities are and being more realistic about things. So I think that's genuinely a positive, actually. One of the things I really love and I'm grateful about for my job is my flexible working. Arguably, something you have to earn, really, and build the trust for. But especially since lockdowns and so on, people's sort of working from home, where you might have people arriving at the door and you might want to, you know, take advantage, take the dogs out during the afternoon or whatever it might be, you use flexible working on a much more bit by bit basis. So that works really well for me. Arguably, if you're self-employed, you've got complete flexible working. So it's still something you have to earn. But today I decided to use 4 hours three hours flexi from 2 till 5 to go and do another one of our regular interviews for our own podcast called the Everyman Can Mental Strength Podcast. And that was the venue for that was a place called Cafe Lily's in Norton in Stockton. We met the owner, fantastic. He was really into mental strength. He's an entrepreneur. So, you know, he's got some of the products. So we did a quick interview with him, then interviewed the lady called Sarah Beth, chatting about habits. And it was just fascinating because it's weird how the universe works sometimes, but the conversations around it very much reflected some of my own thoughts of recent about how you set goals. And January is probably the worst time of the month of the year to set goals. And you hear people starting things off being more active in one of the coldest months of the year. You know, they want to go out and do some running and stuff in the weather where it's probably the worst time. And just interesting just to chat to someone who's really laser focused on habits and how habits form and all the interactions that are at play with our conscious and unconscious when we're developing habits. And just a really fantastic podcast. So with Matt, the two Matts who I do that podcast with, just another really good one, and just continues to expand and grow. So that was really positive. I've come back. I got back home about 4:30, had a little bit extra time to try and finish some emails this morning, but still didn't get everything finished I meant to for the day. So I'm cool with that. I'll start again tomorrow, and it actually feels like even at 45 year old, I'm still learning about my capabilities and my boundaries and kind of how much I can get done. But I'm learning more and wrapping my sort of reflecting on that and wrapping my own thoughts around it. So things getting better, I think, genuinely. Now I've got friends coming over 6:30 tonight. I'm going to be chilling, but because I missed out this morning, I'm now going to sit and do a 20-minute meditation. My wife's cooking tea tonight, so that gives me the flexibility to do that before they arrive. It's a couple of friends for dinner tonight, so that's me now. 15-minute meditation of Niraj Naik's Soma Breathwork free on YouTube to do one of those. So that's me off.
Wednesday.
Morning, David. I've had a great start to the day, up at quarter past six, out for a hot one hour run this morning up in the hills. My head torch on, by myself, music on, beautiful. Bit of snow up there as well. Come back down, jump in a ice cold barrel. I think it was 0.8 degrees. I was in there for about a minute and a half. That was enough. Bit of meditation. Felt absolutely ramped, fired up, ready for the day, highly motivated to get the things done that I'm doing, and things are going pretty well so far. And we do a lot of events. We do a lot of kind of activities where we book people on who work in the system. What I've noticed is generally much more flakiness, basically, where people will book on something and then not turn up. And like the worst expression that was, we had like a mandala Saturday wellbeing session for the workplace members of the wellbeing network late last year. And 13 people booked on and two people turned up with no explanation of kind of no apologies or anything, just booked on and just didn't come, even though there was reminders, no one let us know. I'm saying this more and more, people commit in, and when it comes to face-to-face stuff, and I don't want to do about it. I think basically we've doubled down in terms of the language when people are booking, just to get them to check a box to let them know that the commitment of booking is only one part of the journey. The next bit is actually to get yourself to the session as well, or put your apologies in and let us know if you can't, because even that was becoming a problem. So, and it's not good. It's not good, I think, especially when it comes to the importance of face-to-face contact. So it's bothering me quite a bit, really. And it's making for a lot more admin in my job. So it's actually creating work as well to try and, you know, keep places filled and reorganize recordings to people so they can catch up on a session and pick it up with the next one, all this kind of stuff.
Thursday.
Just riffing today. I don't even know where to start. It's been absolutely, it's 3 o'clock and it's been an absolute whacker of a day where already I'm getting chased for like a budget spend for, even though for one of my budgets, I was only given details quite late on last year to spend, and it's only taken a few weeks to get chased up, why haven't you spent it yet? And I'm trying to put the development processes in place whilst trying to also run a service that's being dogged by potential cuts and people's threats to jobs as well. So it's a bit of a crazy environment at the moment. However, I should be really stressed, but again, like, good morning this morning, stuck to my kind of bit of a strength session, bit of meditation, bit of breath work, got into work, started, felt good. And it's almost like, well, you know, if it was me 5-10 years ago, I'd be tearing my hair out right now and kind of probably panicking, having that sort of chronic stress feeling or that anxiety. But at the moment I'm like, right, okay, what's the priorities? I sort of look at it, lay it all down in front of me on paper and go, right, okay, what's the absolute essentials? You know, much easier able to prioritize and be realistic and feed that back to my own manager who's sort of turning the screw a little bit on the pressure to get these things done, and saying and being realistic about expectations to them as well. And that's fine, because they support, you know, as long as they know where you are, you know, that's okay as well. So not trying to like be Superman to anyone. However, the problem is whenever my work gets pulled into dedicated, you know, to one thing at a time, rather than, you know, a drip piece on each work stream I've got, like dripping the work through on each work stream, so everything can, a bit like spinning plates, some of the plates start to wobble, and that's like a lot, you know, email inbox start to stack. And I'm just concerned now, looking at things that are coming in, that by the time I get turned to play tomorrow, having to focus on these things today and tomorrow, it's going to mean I'm going to have another backlog of emails. So I'll need to consider some extra time to sort of pick those things back up as well. So yeah, it's spinning plates. But actually, what I am doing is taking sort of 5 minutes each hour just to get a quick breather away from it and practicing what I preach, really. So, and I think probably recording these little messages is because I know I'm going to be talking about this as part of this podcast thing, then I'm probably more conscious of it as well. Sometimes I might be more prone to letting things slip and just kind of, you know, not servicing them as quickly as I should as well. So something's happening with me, and I've been to a lot of sort of support around my own trauma actually in the last year, which has helped me sort of process a lot of that and has really helped me release kind of a lot of the things that I used to worry about and just get on with the job, really. So that's been quite positive. Like, I'm well aware of the model of kind of urgency and importance, and sort of this piece of work I've been given is important and it's urgent, so it has to be happening as a priority. I've got other pieces of work that are important but can be delayed. They haven't, the process hasn't, development has started on them, but they're not as urgent. And I've got the work with the students starting next week, so that's quite urgent, but I've already done quite a bit of prep work, so I'm quite confident I can go into that on Tuesday, having done a little bit of completion on Monday, and catch up with some emails and probably pick things back up a little bit as well and push other pieces of work back. So that includes some one or two meetings that are planned for the next 2 weeks as well. So it's a bit of a shift around, but you've got to do what you've got to do.
Friday.
So if I was to slide anything in today, it'd be like, after yesterday and today, I feel a bit overwhelmed. And so I've had to employ all my usual strategies to sort of settle down, not let anxiety creep in or anything like that. But it's still a bit present. And the reality is it's about getting things done to relieve that, because there are things to be done around my budget, getting this budget out the door. I've been getting pressure on me yesterday to get the budget spent, even though for one half of the budget, and I couldn't commit to many things until I knew I had the whole budget, if that makes sense. I didn't get the go ahead until early November, and then it's only taken 6 weeks and they're already on to me about spending it. So it's a bit, but basically I think one of the things I need to keep working on is how I plan. When I do plan and put like an action plan together or whatever, things can go pretty well, but I'm not always the most disciplined at it. In fact, I'm pretty hopeless at it, to be honest. And it is something I need to do a lot better. I'm very good at kind of the creative stuff. I'm good at working, developing, putting ideas on, but I'm not naturally a completer finisher, and that, I think that fits into the category of planning, long-term planning. And so I'm a bit pissed off at the fact that I'm pissed off myself that I'm not better at that. So the truth is, what I need to do is continue to stick. I know exactly what I need to do. I have methods. I've probably tried every different type of planning tactic out there, and it's obviously about being consistent and sticking with one and just getting on with it and doing it. So massive thing from today, and what I should be looking at is going, right, Richie, update your action plans, just get on it, and stop just like doing the next thing that pops up in your email, or doing the next thing that's on the notes in front of you. Actually, you know, take a bit more of a sort of disciplined approach towards it. But it's weird how you piss yourself off when you realize these things as well. You know, this I've got a very love-hate relationship with sort of working from home. One thing that's very clear with me is I spend at least 3 days a week working at home, and it's in relative isolation. I've got a spare bedroom that my wife and I have got a big wardrobe in, but we use it for storage, and we also have a bit of training in here. And she's got a desk sort of perpendicular to mine, and she works as a health visitor at home. And she's home about half a day each day after she's done visits, writing up notes and liaising around the problems for children. And I'm sat here most of the time either on the phone or on emails or, you know, doing work on the laptop. And prior to the lockdowns, it used to be spending almost all the time in the office, maybe one day, 1.5 days a week working hybrid or working at home. And that was because that was the norm. That's where I'd go in the office. You know, you'd be traveling, I'd be cycling more, so I'd be doing more exercise, which would be good for my mental health. But I actually have to sort of I have more time by working at home and end up doing the exercise on a morning or at home anyway. So that still happens, but it was like, I don't know, it's different starts of the day. I'd get in, basically before the lockdowns, I'd get into work and the office would be full, there'd be chatter. And I genuinely don't know if it was more productive or not to be at home, but some days I'm not as productive at home. And I know this because I struggle sometimes. And when I was in the office, it was like I enjoyed most of the time being around the chat. You'd pick up bits and pieces of work that were going on because of conversations and how your work could link into theirs. And that natural thing of being connected with people, I think for a lot of people, maybe not even the majority, because of the way people's work and means they have to be out there. But anyone that works in isolation, alone, whether they're a plumber or whatever it could be, or a plasterer, or just getting on with it, will have their own strategies, or it will suit them in some way or not. And for me, in the public sector, and in this sort of health social care sector, of development roles particularly, it's a problem. And I've mentioned about this earlier in the week about face-to-face stuff, and how, you know, people are committing to booking things but not necessarily turning up, or committing, being more passive towards their commitments, which is,
I don't know what the hell's behind that, but it's a strange thing, and I always enjoyed face-to-face stuff, whether I'm delivering training or whatever it is. And when I do those things, I look forward to it even more than I ever have, because it means I get, you know, real interactions with people around the topics that really matter to me. I haven't got my back to a window, which I have in this room here. It's all just weird. And I'm not sure I like the way this current world is operating. I think within our own service, I don't think our leaders have adapted to that very well. They're not doing videos. They're not doing briefings online. Everything comes via email, and that we don't even get much of that either. There's a disconnect. It's like an inequality between the powers that be, the leadership and the work that's getting done. And some might argue, well, I like to have that space to be able to, you know, to have that autonomy to decide what I'm going to do. And that's good. I do have that, and I'm very grateful for that. I genuinely am. I can sit here and decide, you know, what I'm going to do when, and I'm trusted to do that. But equally, we're part of something bigger, or we should be, and we should certainly feel that. And I don't feel that at all. I feel often quite isolated from the rest of the team, or I bump into people. And it's like, I haven't seen, you know, long time no see. And when it's saying that, it's like, yeah, 3 years. And it's like, I haven't heard from them. I don't know what they're doing, and things have changed, and new faces in the team that I've never met before as well. So I try and introduce myself and get to know people when I do pass by the office, when there's actually people there, which is actually quite a rare thing for many people to be together. So I don't know. I think for me, I have to, you know, I've adapted, and I've had to make changes to adapt to all this stuff. But it sucks actually sometimes. And today's one of those days when I'm sort of feeling that. And with changes going on to staffing, it looks like I'm about to lose a member of staff that supports the work I do. And that's going to be a huge problem, and not one that I'm anticipating is going to be easy to cope with either. So obviously the strength of humans and our intelligence is in one way measured by our ability to adapt. And on that note, I'll have to do probably more of it and get even better at that stuff as well. But that's life. That's life, isn't it? And you can only ever do your best. And we always are doing our best. And for me, like, growth is about knowledge and about using that knowledge to adapt. That's certainly part of it for me. And I'll be looking, you know, in one way, I look forward to a bit to it, because I know that I'll learn things from it and be better for it. But I just think there's just so much more we could do to adapt this new way of working to be more human friendly. And we're not there yet. And with all the discussion about AI, on the horizon, and sort of, you know, virtual, always the virtual meeting thing, it's, you know, it's 2D screens. It's no surprise to me that people are more passive in terms of their commitments. We need to be more face to face and, you know, within that 3 foot range of people, so we can be on that same frequency and energy level as well. So good, the bad and the ugly. Yeah, definitely.
And welcome back. So that was Richie's reflections. That was a week in the life of Richie. So let's just have a little bit of a reflection on that. And Andrew, do you want to just jump in with maybe your first question for Richie there?
From listening to your reflections, what stood out to me is that you get a real sense as though one-to-one contact for you is a huge part of well-being. That kind of sense of being rooted in connection. I think that even might have been not the precise way you put it, but something around that was the way you put it. But just explain just briefly what that kind of represents to you, and what difference that brings to your life.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is how things have changed in the last few years. So I used to be someone who was expected, you know, when I first transferred to public health 2014, we were expected to be in 5 days a week, sort of 9 till 5, 8:30 till 5, whatever it might be. And you get used to being around an office environment. So, I mean, it's not to say we don't adapt to change, and we have to. That's kind of one of the things that makes us human, isn't it? But obviously, prior to the pandemic, actually, prior to the lockdowns particularly, a lot of flexible working policies were starting to come in. So they'd already started implementing, like, working from home maybe a couple of days a week, so the teams kind of have shared cloud space for your save files and all that stuff. So we were quite, funnily enough, like, the public sector, certainly the spaces I work in, were quite well set for it. Fast forward to the lockdowns, obviously, we're all, you know, those of us who can work at home are working at home. And then, of course, the benefit to organisations was realised, wasn't it, that they could pass on, the cynical part of me would say, pass on heating your space onto people, but you can save money on expenses for travelling and all that. So it is a balance to be had. But what really struck me during the lockdowns was my human need for face-to-face connections, share the same energy space as someone, all that kind of stuff. And I miss that. And I don't think, if I even go in the office, it's in the vain hope that someone, others are going to be there, because you never know when people are going to be there. So I've been in before, no one's in. I've been into, it's a big shared space. Sometimes it feels a little bit, lots of people you're not familiar with working with, and it just feels a little bit impersonal. And so for me, it's something I've recognized and you know, I put certain things in place to make sure that I have more contact, more reason to be out visiting, like face-to-face appointments as well.
You mentioned when talking about your wellbeing networks, the companies talk a good game, but then when things get busy, it's usually one of the first things to go by the wayside.
Right. Yeah.
Again, the cynical part of all of our brains, I know, could potentially say that this is something that's being looked at as a box-ticking exercise, mm-hmm. which may well be the case, given that well-being is a relatively new addition to the lexicon, yeah. if you will. But do you see this as something that will, over time, improve as well-being becomes more established and embedded yeah. into general practice?
I do. I think basically, if nothing else, than to remain competitive, I think we started to see a trend, haven't we? Organisations realising that staff are the number one asset, and you know, staff who are looked after perform well. I think it's inevitable, and I think that the next generation coming up are sort of expecting it. I've read articles that suggest that, and that's what I tend to see. I think if I chunk that up to sort of like an organizational level, the 16 years of workplace health and working with organizations, it's kind of, sometimes these things are tick list. It's kind of it's popular to be, you know, to be seen to be doing things. And I genuinely haven't met many high-level managers who are leading organizations who aren't genuinely wanting to see this happen. Like, they want to see the benefits and from the work that they're either investing in or the policies or whatever practices they're putting in place. The problem is, it's actually trickling that culture down, isn't it? It's actually hearts and minds, really, I think. And it's the balance, isn't it, for managers who have a job to get done, whatever line of work they're in. So they've got to achieve stuff and balance that with the needs of their employees. Not an easy game to play by any means. Some managers might take a really severe view of it, like zero-sum game, you know, where they're kind of like, you know, I just need to get my work done. I don't really care about other people, but I'll say the right things. And others might realise more of a win-win approach is the better way to do it. So I think these things stand or fall, not on leadership management. I think they stand and fall on sort of middle management and equally staff, like the culture of actually seeking support when you need it, being open and honest about what's going on within your work and your own limitations based on wherever you are that in your life at that particular moment. So it's complex, but I wouldn't be here doing it, I genuinely think. And workplace health is just a part of what we're involved in, but I wouldn't be involved in doing it if I didn't think it stood a chance of progressing, definitely.
One last question before I pass over to David for his. This is a direct term that you mentioned. You mentioned about practicing what you preach in terms of instilling into your own daily life some of the ideas and processes to improve your own well-being. Is that something that you find easy?
I do know. No, hold on, let me rephrase that. Do I find it's never easy? Because often it's doing things which are uncomfortable. Someone said to me last night, I was doing a bit of IEMT on someone, integral eye movement therapy, and someone said to me, there's not many things actually that are comfortable that are good for you. And I was like, okay, so that conversation led into a whole element about a lot of the things that are good for you take you out of your comfort zone, basically. So it's easier to sit on yourself than it is to go out for a run. Whether you're getting a nice bath on the morning, I never look forward to getting in it. In that cold barrel ever, you kind of get in, like preparing yourself for it, feel fantastic afterwards when you've done it. And so when I've got a good routine, it's easy to stay in that routine. It's if I ever fall out of that routine, getting going again is quite difficult. But I think every time I've been through that process, I think you the more you associate the importance of those activities to your mental health, to the quality of day you'll have, knowing that a good night's sleep the night before will generally lead to a better day than the next day, then you just have to keep program your brain. And I think the way I do that is through journaling. So, which is about 60% of the time, I do this journal. And we've got a program that we run through the Wellbeing Network for journaling. We've created this bespoke journal. We run about groups at workshops for about 20 people at a time and show them how to use it. And I think, like, when I write those, one of the questions in there is write down things that went well today and why they went well. And then there's other prompts you can use to write those things down. And it reminds you. And I, you know, those habits, about 2 weeks, I'm told, you know, from evidence, is about doing those things throughout 2 weeks, start to embed and change like some of the connections in your brain, you know, that might link up to the reward center, and prioritize those things for yourself. And I think for me, I'm certainly in the best place I've ever been in my life, for my well-being, for sure, like kind of putting those things forward and having good boundaries and that kind of thing. But it's, I think it's probably, and I was guilty of it until my mid-30s, there's probably a lot of people walking around who aren't even contemplating or even thinking about those things that and how, you know, decisions they make every day impact their mood and their productivity or their how well their day goes, basically. And I think a whole load of that is something we all need to take a look at first before we start deferring our mental health and well-being to our doctors. Actually, how much are we doing within our own lives to help how we help ourselves along, basically?
From my perspective, then, I guess whenever I look into public health and look at health initiatives, I think one of the things that kind of like freaks me out is how much is involved. Because when you're talking about health improvement, health initiatives, it surely it's like a snowball effect. Everything starts to impact one another. I guess from your perspective, how do you kind of stay on task? How do you make sure that you you kind of focus on the things that you need to? Because I think for me, if I was in your world, I'd be thinking 100 things all at once. And it's just like, how do you kind of, I guess, keep on task and keep on the areas that you need to?
Well, I've got a manager who's been kicking my butt this week for kind of chasing me to get invoices in and so on. So that's one thing. Have a manager you have a good relationship with who knows you, understands you, and then, you know, get to know, get, you know, accept the things that you know about yourself, which means your weaknesses as well. So I'm one of those sort of partly creative, partly innovators, if you like, and kind of, I always see ideas and I'm really good at creating and starting programs off. So I'm not a default completer finisher. So, and I'm still working towards that in terms of like getting that balance right. I didn't used to be about the process. I used to be very, you know, sort of like more woolly about things, creative, get into it, get really excited about ideas and so on. So I do have action plans. At the moment, I have 6 pieces of sort of post-it notes in front of me for jobs that get done, and they go into a little to-do list each day, and then they get chucked, and then the to-do list looks like that, and then I can prioritize for that day. Then you've got emails coming in. I get an average of about 25 to 35 emails a day, but on average count. So it's like, and maybe 10 of those, 8 or 10 of them might require something which is more than 5 minutes, if that doesn't sound ridiculous. So, but if it's less than 5 minutes, defer it, put it into a separate inbox for a separate time that I put aside. So the modern world of email, project management, I have different kind of folders. I still like to use pen and paper, like very much kind of in terms of like developing ideas. But I don't know, I'd like to say I have the perfect system. I mean, I've got the 4 Ds for emails were introduced to me some time ago, which is like, do it now if it's less than 5 minutes, delete it if it's not for you, delegate it if it's actually for someone else. I forgot what the fourth one was. It'll come to me in a sec.
Those 3 Ds are enough from my perspective.
3 Ds, yeah, exactly. there's little systems like that you can get into. But the difficulty in my job is, I'd say what really helped that kind of urgent, important model. So like that's in my brain now. I think I picked that up through NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. And it was very much about, so anytime I'm looking at a job, it's very much like, how urgent is it? When does it need to be done by? And then how important is this in the grand scheme of things? Things at the very bottom are things that are going to make the way I think about it is, it's going to make a very, very little bit of a very little difference to many people. It's not just about my job or anything like that, but basically in terms of impact, like kind of what's going to have the greatest impact if left undone. And then of course, how urgent something is, if it's time critical, you better get on with it. I work better with deadlines, to be honest with you. That's something I've learned about myself as well. But yeah, funny enough, that my manager has been cracking the whip a little bit. I'm not sure how much she appreciated the fact that I was actually very much in line and already had all the cogs turning for the thing that I was getting, that she was kicking my butt, not kicking my butt about, but encouraging me with it to get more of a sense of urgency. But I was actually having meetings that day, so it was a strange one. But people, sorry, if you develop over time and change your practice, people who get to know you over time, if you've been doing the job a long time, might second guess and assume that there's going to be a certain gap in terms of your performance, because that's how you are. And of course, if you've developed, it's probably worth noticing those changes in people, then acknowledging them, and then trying to embed that into your own thinking, so you don't always second guess on people's previous style of doing things. Because if they're tuned into developing themselves and growing, then that's probably something that needs acknowledging, doesn't it? I think.
Brilliant. So we've talked a lot about, I guess, your perspective on things and kind of your experiences. And I think if we mind looking at things slightly different just for a second, because in the world of health improvement, as I mentioned, there's like so many areas that you can be involved in. What for you then is like kind of the interesting topics for 2024? Here we are. Even saying that makes it feel like we're in the future. You know, when you were a kid and you think 2024, it's like that is the future. We're living in spaceships. We're not. But what for you is kind of like the big topics, the hot topics in the world of health improvement? Again, whether this is nationally or at local level, what do you think are like the hot topics or that you're hearing quite a lot about this moment in time?
My world is an odd one because of mental health is effectively impacted on by so many factors, housing, relationships, financial situation, and the list is endless, isn't it? And that's how people present. So for me, that stuff, actually, those factors that affect mental health, if you like, are often referred to in public health as wider determinants of health. So, and that's where you get into health inequalities, people that have the have-nots, and kind of, you know, the sort of the situation that people are even born into, best start in life, and that kind of thing. But for me, that's well-being, basically. That's the factors that affect well-being, those wider determinants. I think right now we are, whether it's through irony or whatever, but basically necessity of we've got our resources, we have access to them are more sparse. We have funding being reduced every year by government into local government. Local governments having to find money wherever they can get it, frankly, and that means often increasing their council tax bills in areas where people can't afford it. My point being is that I think one of the big areas for me personally is about like pathways for well-being. It's about person-centered working and having a trauma-informed sort of practice filter around that. So we are all different. Services often treat people as if they're treating them with supporting them, treating them, whatever word you want to choose. Supporting people with one issue at a time. And we've started to see the emergence over the last few years of quite a great deal more services who are trying to tackle several issues, taking a more person-centered view of things. So changing futures, transformation challenge in our own area, great examples like this that use social prescribing kind of type models to ask the question of what's happened to someone rather than what's wrong with them. And then following empowerment models that actually enable that person to identify what's going on in their life, be supported around their trauma, their triggers, get them into a place where they're not hyper aroused all the time, they're not stressed and anxious all the time, so they can make better decisions. And actually putting that trust into people that they will make, when they're in that good, healthy place, they'll make better decisions about the issues that pertain to like the improving their life. I think like that's the direction of travel. And I just keep seeing all these reports coming across the desk. Our own director shared one with me recently and asked my thoughts about how we see that with the Wellbeing Network progressing. So that's it for me. I think services that are better joined up. I mean, I think Tony Blair was talking about joined up services in the early noughties. But it's back to that top level, how it filters down, how it understands. If necessity is going to demand this because of lack of finances and lack of resources, fine. You know, we could have done it 20 years ago, frankly. But we've got better technologies now to be able to support some of these systems. What services are out there? What can you access in your local area? What's going to work for you? Social prescribing for me, though, is like one of the fantastic examples that's been around for years, but has now found its place. It's person-centered working, I think, it's trauma-informed. I think that's what's going on now, and I think services should probably take note and sort of follow that model as much as they can.
Fantastic. And I guess just on your reflections and your reflections during the week, I guess in this world, it's very easy to get lost in the deficits, the challenges, as you mentioned there, you know, the cost of living is just horrendous for everyone across the board. But I guess it's at this point, I just like to kind of really think about maybe end on some positives and just think from your perspective, the job that you do, what gives you the most joy, the most happiness in doing your job? What is it you walk away from going, today's been a really good day, or it's been a really good week?
100%. So my default answer for that generally is that I mentioned there about empowerment and people discovering, particularly empowerment to me, is people discovering abilities or potential that they didn't realize they had or didn't believe they had. So at a one-to-one level or even at a group level, my greatest motivation is seeing people, those lights switch on and I can do this, you know, and actually then starting to lead their own journey. So that watching people go from I can't to I can, basically, is a beautiful thing to see. And that's one of my greatest motivators. However, I'm in a development role. So any practitioner work I do generally is outside of work or delivering mental health first aid training. So in my development role, it's getting involved in pieces of work that are supporting the facilitation of that kind of work as well. So when people are change ready, they can find something that enables them to find what works for them. But I just have heard, and when you hear the stories about those, so I'd like to facilitate more programs that tell the stories of people and their successes to inspire more people to do those things. And that's one of the positives, I think, of kind of, we hear a lot about negative about social media and so on and digital, but it's allowed us to share those types of stories much more. And I still think a good inspirational story can sell as much as a bad story if it's relative to the person who's listening. And so that's, for me, what we need to, that's what motivates me, that's for sure.
Brilliant. I guess the last question from me is, the week, looking back at that week and the recordings that you had, what do you think has been your main takeaway from it, or your main learning point, or just any sort of reflections that you took from it?
I talk too much.
No, you reflect well, Richie. You reflect.
Do
well.
I? Yes. No. So, well, actually, what it does is when you speak, this is one of the things that works with talking therapy. I think when people start to say the truth of what's going on with the situation, when you speak it, it makes it real. And so I walked away from leaving audio messages on your WhatsApp, on the WhatsApp group we're in, and it was real. So basically it was like, yes, you have got all these things in front of you. Yes, you are working on your boundaries and you are sort of not saying yes to anything until it's actually a yes. And you know for certain that's absolutely something you can commit to. So saying it made it real. And I think I then actually went and made other notes. Like I said, in my journal, it started going through that process, converted into like my sort of daily notes and my thinking. Yeah, it's the saying it. It makes it real. It does.
Just finally, you mentioned in the reflections, the Every Man Can, the Mental Strength podcast.
Yeah.
Just tell us a quick little bit about that. Tell us how that's going and what the aims are behind that.
Myself, Matt Sterland, Matt Horman, ex-policeman, Matt Sterland, fireman, me, public health. Less impressive on the paper.
It does sound like the start of a joke, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it? I wish it was, but there's the both of them are very, they're both blokes who have been on quite a journey themselves in the last 10 years. Myself for about 15 years in this kind of like healing, if you like, to summarize it. And they're both passionate about mental health. And Matt Sterling's done some NLP training. He's got his fingers in quite a few different pies outside the fire service, but he's a really positive guy who's just got a lot of lovely things to share and is on it. And so I think the reason it works, and Matt's on his own healing, he's just started a new job at Middlesbrough Football Club Foundation, which is fantastic news. So I think the beautiful thing is we're on a similar journey. I think we're all blokey blokes, if you like. I'm probably the least blokey bloke of them all, really. And none of us are alphas in that respect, probably more zetas or a bit of beta and stuff like that. But I think we treat the interviews as we go into it curious, really curiously minded. So when we're interviewing people, it's from a genuine individual interest. I'm not really thinking about what will people like to hear and does this sound cool and whatever. It's like we're asking questions because we're having a chat in the pub, basically, about things. So whoever's not leading the pod enjoys whoever's not leading the pod enjoys not knowing about too much about the person we're going to interview. So they start off, read out the bio of the person, and the other two who aren't leading the interview hear it. And then there's only three questions we ever ask, which is, what's mental strength to you? Somewhere during the interview, we'll ask, what do you do to maintain your mental strength? And then the last one is, we always try and sneak in, is, what's your best advice to people to develop the mental strength? And we've had different answers every single time. And so it's that variety in different angles brings me all the way back to that point of people have to find what works for them. NHS doesn't have the monopoly on mental health. Thank you, Adam Petson, for that quote. But it's true. I think this real true success for people is finding what works for them. And that's not something which actually a lot of people have been comfortable with. We tend to try and fit in, don't we, to other things. So we explore those types of issues. Podcast is going pretty well. It's been growing consistently. Got listeners from all over the world. America's our second biggest listenership, about 85% from the UK. Some random countries here and there all over the world that people listen in from. Yeah, it's good. And the whole point of Every Man Can is it's one of the things we're doing under a new kick, a new community interest company that I'm setting up with the two Matts and three others who have volunteered to become like directors on the kick community interest company. So all the profit, anything we turn over in doing that, will go straight back into services that we'll end up delivering for men's health. So I'm really excited about that. That's going to kick off quite soon. And yeah, maybe we can chat about that more in the future, who knows?
Yeah, no, that sounds fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Brilliant stuff. Well, all the links to your podcast we'll put in our podcast feed as well. So we'll cross the streams where we can get people funneled your way. Sounds fascinating, and I'm sure people will love to give that a listen. Well, I guess at this point, all that's left to say is thank you once again, Richie, for being on this and for your honesty as well throughout this. I think it's fascinating to hear, and I'm sure people will really take away a lot from it. So thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Thanks, David. Thanks, Andrew.
Cheers, Richard.
That was Richie Andrew with his reflections of a week in the life of a health improvement specialist for public health. Let us know your thoughts, send us your comments, and please like, share and subscribe. You can contact us on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it nowadays, whatever particular flavour of your dumpster fire is. You can email us, you can get us on LinkedIn, whatever you want. All that's left is for me to say, I've been Andrew James.
And I've been David Gill.
And you've been listening to Frontline.